BUF File, the ultimate Bills podcast.
Welcome aboard. With week three in the books, it's time to take a spin around the league and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his insight regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. In this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the one and only Sean Salisbury joins us with his Tell It Like It Is take on the NFL. But as always, we start with the big interview, so let's get to it.
The big interview.
Let's check in with the Rochester Democratic Chronicle and Sal Majorana. You can follow him at Sal Majorana on Twitter. And let me spell that out for you in case you haven't, if you're not familiar with Majorana of Buffalo. That's Sal, S-A-L-M-A-I-O-R-A-N-A. How are you doing tonight, Sal?
I am good. How are you?
I am doing all right because I am fascinated by this Bills team. Last week, Rex Ryan's seat was so hot, I think it may have actually had flames. And now, all of a sudden, they go ahead and take the Cardinals apart in spectacular fashion, picking off Carson Palmer four times, making him, quite frankly, look a little bit old. What happened in the last week?
Yeah, I tell you what, it really is kind of a puzzling thing because the Bills couldn't have played worse on defense against the Jets back on a Thursday night. And, you know, Rex Ryan clearly was challenged by what happened. He was really aggravated. The defense did nothing well that night. Ryan Fitzpatrick looked like, you know, Joe Montana in his prime. And downright, it was actually downright embarrassing, especially because it was on national TV, plus it was the Jets and Ryan Fitzpatrick. So the Bills did a little soul-searching this week. I mean, Rex even said, which we all kind of rolled our eyes when he said it, but he felt like Arizona was just the right team to be coming in there because, you know, they needed a supreme test and they needed to prove that they could survive and pass a test like Arizona was going to give them. And I got to give him credit. I mean, Rex is kind of a blowhard sometimes, but he kind of called that one. He called his team out. He put the challenge to them and they answered the bell and they played great. It was a great defensive plan and they executed it and made, like you said, Carson Palmer just look terrible in this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's relentless pass rush, relentless pressure, five sacks, four interceptions, absolutely remarkable, and he was really flustered all night. He fumbled the ball twice, and fortunately didn't lose them for his case, but it was a really interesting game. It really struck me where the first time that I've really seen Carson Palmer maybe look like he was a little old, and I don't know if that's a trend or if maybe Buffalo was absolutely that dominant because they got some outstanding performances on defense. That's where this team has to probably come from, isn't it? Because even though they do have some explosive weapons, and Tyrod Taylor was absolutely outstanding as well as LeSean McCoy, but this is a team that's going to lead first with its defense and this kind of methodology here to go rattle the quarterback, see if you can get a turnover or two, and then put your offense in a favorable position. This is pretty much exactly how Rex Ryan draws up his perfect game, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, that's how it was supposed to go last year. I mean, he came in, you know, like I said, full of bluster. That the Bills were going to be number one in the league in the NFL in defense after being fourth the year before, and they kind of fell flat on their face. I mean, Rex, and he admitted after the season that he made a few tactical errors by trying to meld two systems together, you know, using Jim Schwartz's 4-3, which the players were familiar with, and then using his 3-4, and it just didn't work. It was just an abomination all year. So this season, you know, he made it a very clear point that we're going to play my defense, and this is how it's going to be, whether you like it or not. Well, the players have bought in, and again, it didn't get off to a great start. They actually played pretty well against Baltimore, but the second game against the Jets, as I said, was just a complete mess. And now I think guys are getting a little more comfortable, and they also realize their back was against the wall. They could not afford to go 0-3. Everyone knows that. It would be a disaster for their playoff chances. So I think it was a much better defensive performance, a much better scheme. The coaches did a great job, I think. And I think this is what we'll see more of from the Bills in the coming weeks because really right now their offense is nowhere. Without Sammy Watkins, they really don't have a passing game, and LeSean McCoy is pretty much all they've got. So they have to win with defense.
LeSean McCoy fortunately took a big leap. Now, after basically getting about 127 yards rushing in the first two games, and that's with 31 carries, he really exploded. 110 yards, two touchdowns on only 17 carries, you know, terrific yards average. And maybe we made even more impressive because of exactly what you're talking about, Sal. There's not a lot of passing game to speak of. They knew that LeSean McCoy was going to be the guy they were going to basically try to ride, and the Cardinals couldn't stop him, and this is one of the better defenses in the league.
Yeah, absolutely. When they, you know, I'm going over to the game Sunday morning, and we got the news that Sammy Watkins was not going to play, and even Greg Salas, who's their third receiver, wasn't going to play. So you're really wondering, you know, what could the Bills possibly do to move the ball on offense and win this game? And Arizona knew this clearly. You know, it was going to be stopped with Sean McCoy, and they should be fine. Well, what ended up happening was the Bills' offensive line was outstanding. They opened some gaping holes for McCoy, and he had a great day. Scored two touchdowns. One of them was a 24-yard run up the middle where he was virtually untouched. That kind of gave you an idea, right? The Bills were on point, and they carried it through the rest of the day. They survived the game that really they had no receivers whatsoever to throw to. Tyrod Taylor really didn't do a whole lot in the passing game, but the running game carried them through.
I think when people look at the box score, they look at Tyrod Taylor going 14 for 25, 119 yards and a pick, and say, oh, he just didn't have it. But then you go and look at the receivers. The leading receiver was Robert Woods and then Walter Powell. After, you know, Nick O'Leary had one catch for 28 yards, he was tied with Powell in yardage. So, I mean, these are guys that you might not be able to pick out of a lineup in a lot of cases unless you're a hardcore Bills fan. And they got enough done. And Taylor did a terrific job with his feet as well, 76 yards in the touchdown there. I think Taylor was a little bit more impressive than he's going to be given credit for, given the box score, given what he had to work with. What did you see from him in this game?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a long way to go. And again, I'll give him a pass on this game because it literally was a preseason lineup as far as the, you know, as far as the receiving core goes. But, you know, Taylor's got a lot of work to do. He's got to become more efficient as a pocket passer. You know, he's dynamic when he's outside the pocket. We know about his legs. He can run. He can make big plays happen when nothing's there. But, you know, to play quarterback in the NFL, you got to throw for more than 119 yards. I don't care who your receivers are. They got nothing from Charles Clay, their tight end, who they're paying an awful lot of money to and really hasn't produced for them. Even McCoy didn't do much. I thought they would try to involve LeSean McCoy more out of the backfield in the passing game. Really didn't materialize. So Tyrod's got some work to do. He's got to find a way to use the middle of the field. It's been a bugaboo of his since he became the Bills' starting quarterback. Everything is to the outside, to the sideline, to the beat up the numbers, out to the sideline. The middle is like a gaping abyss for the Bills' offense, and they've got to find a way to start being more productive in that area.
Well, one of the challenges for this team that has still a lot of injury issues as well is now it is Patriots week. But in the body language of Rex Ryan today, his press conference, he looked like he was feeling like his old self, making a little fun of Bill Belichick, starting his press conference being kind of grumbly and a bit of an imitation, kind of picking at their quarterback situation. Are these the situations at times with Rex Ryan? He's so much fun because of that regard. He's entertaining to watch. But every once in a while, and I'd love your take on it because I'm not around it as much, it seems like when Rex gets a little too up, a little too confident, a little too much poking with the opponent, that's sometimes when the Bills tend to slip.
Yeah, Rex sometimes is his own worst enemy. Now, you know, I'm in the media, so I appreciate it. I mean, it's way better than – I'd much rather deal with Rex Ryan every day than Bill Belichick, let's be perfectly honest. Now, I would prefer the Bills win more, too. But Rex is a good personality. I think he's good for the NFL. He brings a, you know, he brings a fresh perspective. He gets it. I think he's always gotten it. But the problem with Rex is, like I said, he can be his own worst enemy, and he goes too far sometimes. And he makes boisterous, you know, comments, and then he can't back it up. And that's what people get out of him most for. People really take him to task when he, you know, starts being a braggart and pokes fun at people and can't back it up. So he's always had a thing with Belichick. It goes back to the Jets days. That's just a guy that he knows he probably can't ever out-coach Belichick, so he figures he might as well poke the bear and have a little fun with him and see if he can get him off his game. Unfortunately, it really hasn't worked in New York or Buffalo.
Well, we don't know who will be playing quarterback for the Patriots in that game. Of course, Jimmy Garoppolo is hurt. Jacoby Brissett suffered an injury. Tom Brady is still suspended. The timing for the Bills couldn't be better. You did get one of the first four where Tom Brady's not going to be there. You presume in week five he's going to probably come back with a vengeance. But how important is this game? I mean, this is a, you think about the injuries and everything else, even with the quarterback situation of the Patriots, it doesn't on paper stack up well for the Bills. If they lose this game, does that matter that much, or is this the sort of quote-unquote schedule loss that everyone sort of expected, and it's only amazing if they manage to steal one?
Well, no, it means a lot because, you know, the Bills had opportunities to win their first two games. I really thought they were going to win the first two in Baltimore and then against the Jets, and then they could afford to play these two really good teams back-to-back, and if they lost them both, okay, they're 2-2, and that's not a bad mark for the quarter poll for this team. Now that they've given away the Baltimore game and the Jets game, they lose this one, they're going to be 1-3. Then they're facing the trip out west to play the Rams, who aren't a great team, but, you know, that's going to be a tough game for the Bills. So their season, really, we talked about it this week in Buffalo, that a loss for the Cardinals, their season really was on the brink, and they managed to survive the 1 week. But really, that game against the Cardinals kind of gets even right out and washed away if they can't back it up and beat the Patriots, and it's going to be an awfully tall task no matter who Belichick plays at quarterback.
Well, a very big win this week for the Bills, but now it's on to Patriots week, and Sal Majorana has all the news you need to know about the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle, and you can follow him at Sal Majorana on Twitter, and I suggest you do so because, as you pointed out, Rex Ryan and the Bills are always entertaining no matter what's going on. Sal, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Appreciate it.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it, too.
So, Majorana with the Rochester Democrat and Chronicle covering the Bills for you. And up next, the coach, Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now to go around the NFL, we bring in the coach, Brian Billick, brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. Coach, an interesting week where the NFL starts to sort some things out here. It's only 3 weeks in, but it feels like we've learned a couple things about some teams. And then there's a few we found out we didn't learn anything at all. I want to start right off with the Cardinals and Bills, a game in which Rex Ryan's seat could not have been any hotter, was basically almost in flames. And then they go out and absolutely trounce the Cardinals in a game where, quite frankly, Carson Palmer, to me, looked for the first time like he maybe was getting a little bit old. What did you see from both those teams this week?
Yeah, I think it was a surprise. It was an opportunity for Arizona. And you can always talk about that going from the, you know, quasi-West Coast to East Coast. They were playing at basically 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock in the morning body time, which is always difficult. But in an opportunity, in an atmosphere, and as you said, we've all talked all week about the pressure that Rex Ryan and the Bills were under at home. Had it not started out not well, you kind of know the way that crowd would have gone. But the thing that jumped out at me was just how much more physical the Bills were on both sides of the ball. Arizona came into the season as a physical front seven. They wanted to be able to run the ball. We know the explosives they could have with Carson Palmer and Larry Fitzgerald and that group. And they just lack that physicalness, and that's something that's got to be a concern going forward.
So let's go over to the game that I thought it was early. It was the Thursday game, and a little bit stunning, really. The Houston Texans, off to a good start, just looked completely hapless and hopeless in Foxborough. Jacoby Brissett, in his very first start, showed up and played pretty well. Looked like Bill Belichick managed to just scheme Brock Osweiler into oblivion. How much of this do you chalk up to a bad game by the Texans where you just kind of crumple it up and say, let's go on to next week? Or how many things did you see in that game that maybe concerned you about the Texans? And by the way, who are the Patriots going to play at quarterback next week?
Yeah, good question. You know, we all have this well-founded confidence in New England that any time they're at home, that's just a tough place to play. It's a tough place to play. And why are tough places to play? Because the team is good. Yeah, the crowd is a difference and can be loud noise and stuff like that. But they're tough at home because they're good. And you knew the game plan they wanted to have. Brissett was less than 20 passes, very efficient, didn't turn the ball over, converted on some third down with his legs, saw a whole bunch of blue air at blunt. They ran for 185 yards total on the night on close to 40 attempts. And you could see that Houston just couldn't get anything going. Almost every three and out, which begs the question, okay, where does Houston go from here? Yeah, they're in a division that looks to be very winnable. But again, the challenge for Houston is, okay, can you progress through the playoffs? Have you shown any sign that your team, if in the playoffs, can go on the road, it can go into a Pittsburgh, go into a New England, and win? And they certainly didn't on Thursday night. Doesn't mean that they're not going to get better. And for New England, it's this faith in Bill Belichick is, maybe we don't even need a quarterback. Maybe we'll just direct snap to LeGarrette Blount, Julian Edelman. We're going to spot you. We're going to spot you, no Tom Brady. We're going to spot you, no Jimmy Garoppolo. We're going to spot you all these things. Really, it's kind of like the presidential debate. The low expectation coming into this next game, and this is going to be interesting with them playing the Buffalo Bills, because with the big win, the assumption is, and with no Tom Brady and no Garoppolo, and that they should just kill the Patriots coming off a really good win. If they don't, this is going to be interesting.
I guess that's a really good point, because I've talked about Rex Ryan a little bit, and we saw the Bills get the big win. Rex Ryan is already in full week taunting the Patriots on his Monday conversation, you know, kind of had a grumbly little Bill Belichick imitation. He's had a tendency of doing this before, and it's what makes him such an entertaining guy to cover in the NFL. But it also sometimes gets you in trouble, because you've run into situations with coaches, with players, with anybody who are sometimes writing checks with their mouth that they can't necessarily cash. If the Bills don't get this done against New England, does Rex Ryan stand the chance of basically undoing some of the good work that he did this week?
They could, but you've got to take that chance from the standpoint of, and knowing Rex as well as I do, and the time he was with me, if you corner Rex, this is exactly what you're going to get. It eventually wore out in New York. Why? Because eventually you've got to win. That's the only way to back it up. It's like any, and I hate to use the term bully, because I'm not referring to him as a bully, but, you know, sometimes the best way to confront a bully is just punch him in the nose. And all of a sudden now he's no longer a bully. Well, you've got to follow it up with a win. And for them, now it's Buffalo. And you know the fans in Buffalo and everything. They've got that little bit of chip on the shoulder. And I think they love it, providing you win. But if you do that and you don't win, particularly under these circumstances, it was great to have a great win at Arizona at home. But if you're Buffalo, and if you're Rex Ryan, And now you're playing the team that is obviously everybody's in the division's arch rival, a team that's won the last 8 division titles. And they don't have a Tom Brady, and they don't have Jimmy Garoppolo, and even where they have Brissett or whoever they have in there. If you can't win now in New England, then this creates we're right back to where we were square one last week, and where do you go from here?
Let's head over to the AFC, where no Teddy Bridgewater, no Adrian Peterson, no Matt Khalil, no problem for the Vikings, who go into Carolina and really play an impressive game, beating the Panthers 22-10. Their second statement game of the year, despite it seems that the pieces and parts are falling off the wagon, the Vikings have to be off to one of the more impressive and improbable starts of the season. When you see the way they've played in the last couple weeks, what's the ceiling for these guys?
I don't think there is one, and you can fill it up in 3 things: defense. Sam Bradford's been great for them, and they'll find a little bit of a rhythm of a running game. But this defense is as good as I've seen, and I've got a little bit of a history with this. This is good, and it's a kind of a no-name defense, with no disrespect to the players. I mean, to most lay people, you're going to name someone on the Minnesota Vikings defense, and they might come up with Anthony Barr, but outside of that, you don't. Now, still, that's a talented defense. They have 8 starters that were our former first or second round draft choice. So this is a talented defense. Mike Zimmer's brilliant. They don't do a lot. They're not a complex defense, but they're fundamentally sound in what they do. They know how to attack you. They're great open field tacklers. This defense is as advertised, and this is a team with a quarterback that should be able to manage what they need to do to complement this defense that is very much the team to beat in the NFC right now, along with the Philadelphia Eagles.
When I look at the Vikings, what I see is a comparison to last year's Denver Broncos in a lot of ways, a team that, again, very talented defense, not all that tricky. There's not any sort of gimmicks or anything you have to overcome. But it seems to me like this is maybe, to an extent, a poor man's Denver Broncos from last year, with an offense that maybe has an opportunity to match that or even exceed the Broncos, and they managed to go the whole way. So when you look at the Vikings, that's a pretty fascinating story. We'll see where that goes. But as for the Panthers, they lost 1 regular season game last year. They've already lost 2. From the macro level, what seems to be off?
Well, and that's pretty lofty bar, you know, to
right.
2 games. And so, oh my God, you doubled your roster from last year. Well, wait a minute now. That's pretty tough sledding. I think what we saw in Carolina, everybody talks about the Super Bowl hangover. I don't know that I believe in that, although the numbers might indicate that. But when you play Carolina, the key is you got to get Cam Newton to throw the ball 35 times or more. Now, you could say that about a lot of teams, but Cam Newton's numbers, his productivity, falls off precipitously, but he has to throw the ball 35 times or more. His 2.5 touchdowns to interception ratio drops to 1-1. His completion percentage drops down. I think he's 7-16, something like that, in games that he throws the ball more than 35 times. And so that's exactly what happened in this game. I think he threw it exactly 35 times. And they couldn't get the running game going. Again, let's go back to the defense, the turnovers that they created, the short field they were able to put that offense on. So I think this was more of less of an indictment of Carolina than it was noteworthy of what Minnesota could do on the road in Carolina.
Well, let's go to another team that's struggling after their loss last night in Monday Night Football. The Saints are 0-3. They're 0-2 at home, which is even more disturbing. Where does this team have to get better, and how much time do they have left in which to do it?
Well, this keeps coming back to the same formula. This is a team whose defense is bad in biblical proportion. I mean, I've been saying all week long that the biggest concern I had going in, and this is a perfect example, you look at the game. Drew Brees feels like, if I don't score 30 points, and last night 30 was not enough, but if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. When he gets in that mode, 2 years ago in 2014, he threw 17 interceptions. Why? Because they were next to last in the league in defense. 2 years before that, 2012, he threw 19 interceptions. And that's not Drew Brees. Why? Because they were last in the league in defense. They've got to go out and you know, if we don't score 30 points, we're going to lose. And that puts Drew Brees in a situation where he has to maybe make some throws or do some things that he would normally do in a more equitable situation. Even though Drew Brees had a brilliant night, Matt Ryan, who now the last two games has looked more like the Matt Ryan of old in terms, you know, had a very equitable night in what he did. And I just think the defense that New Orleans is spotting team and what Drew Brees has to do to overcome that. I mean, throwing the ball 54 times, I don't care who you are, it's just not a good thing.
Well, we'll wrap up with one of the faces of the league here. Last week, there were questions surrounding Aaron Rodgers, questions surrounding the Packers. You know, is something really wrong? Packers come out, Aaron Rodgers throws 4 touchdowns in the first half and does it effortlessly. For the Packers now, they got Eddie Lacy had his first ever 100-yard rushing game in September. Rodgers looks right again. Jordy Nelson is healthy. Was this just maybe the start of something special for the Packers this week against the Lions?
Well, and I think you just pointed out the key for them, their ability to run the ball. In the previous games, they didn't have that kind of rhythm. They need to have that running game as a balance. The unique thing about the Green Bay Packers is the receiving core, like their entire team. It's homegrown. It's always has been. When you had Donald Driver and Greg Jennings and in the heyday of their Super Bowl, and then a young Jordy Nelson. And I thought Jordy Nelson, when he got hurt last year, was great opportunity for the other receivers to get into that rhythm, you know, with now Devontae Adams and then Randall Cobb and Rodgers, the tight end, to really, you know, develop that rapport with Aaron Rodgers. And then now when you had Jordy Nelson back, boy, you're off and running. And early on, we didn't see that. We saw a bit of that last night, or on Sunday. Now, what we also saw was the defense that kind of let Detroit back in the door a little bit. So that's still my biggest concern for them. But offensively, it's hard to look at Green Bay and not feel like they may not lead the league in offense that we're used to seeing in these mega games, but they've got some balance and a plan. I like it when they come out of the no huddle, when they have a little more orchestrated offense. I think that suits them a little bit better. So they obviously have got to feel very good about where they are. But they're also in a division now facing a team that we just talked about, the Minnesota Vikings, that are pretty darn good.
He is the coach. This is Brian Billick, and we tell you every week, when you listen to him, you become a smarter football fan. Thanks for your time, Coach. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Remember to visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. They present the coach and make sure your family is getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time. So visit SeatGeek.com. Next up, we're going to overtime.
Overtime.
It is overtime, and joining us today, the inimitable Sean Salisbury. You know him from SB Nation Radio. Hey, I also know a guy from there. That's me. And you can find him at Sean Unfiltered on Twitter. I highly suggest, if you're not doing that, you should do that already. Sean, how are you doing today? Oh, hey, no problem at all. So we have a six-pack of questions ready for overtime. Let's start right here. Trevor Siemian had 312 yards, four touchdowns in Cincinnati, his very first road start for the Denver Broncos. Judging at the quarterbacking they had last year, is he a better option right now than Peyton Manning or Brock Osweiler was in 2015?
Better option. Here's the difference. You had the Brock, who was more physical than Peyton, and Peyton at the time, you know, when the change was made, and Peyton, who is the smartest quarterback we've ever had, and then the best at manipulating a game plan or a defense that we've ever seen. So, and cerebral. So you had a combination of both, but I think this kid's got both. Now, I don't want to go overboard and say after three starts, he's better than Brock, but Brock only had six starts. So physically, and the ability, the things that he's showing, especially last week on the road, are pretty impressive. I'm not ready to go there yet, just right now after three games, because what Peyton did was keep you out of bad plays for the most part as well. So I think that combination's better still, but I'm impressed with this kid. The quantum leaps he's made from week one to week, now heading into week four, I give him a lot of credit, and I'm actually excited and proud of him. It's fun to watch, but I'll still stick with the two-headed guys from last year because of their experience.
Let's move on to a two-headed guy that's turned out by a necessity up in New England. Jimmy Garoppolo, Jacoby Brissett. Don't know which one's going to play, if either. Maybe it's even Julian Edelman. But does it matter? Is this team going to hand Tom Brady a bright, shiny 4-0 record upon his return from suspension?
Yeah, I think so, especially since they have this game at home again. Now, you know that they're going to try to pressure either guy. But the key, if you're going to blitz a young quarterback, you're probably playing into their hands, because then they don't have to go through the whole process of reading it out. They can just pick one receiver and bet the best matchup and throw it. So that's the problem. The key is play them zone and make them go through their progressions. But I'm not sure it matters, although obviously Garoppolo gives you not only the feet and the arm. I think you're a little more limited with Jacoby Brissett. That being said, we've never had a coach in the history of this game who's a better in-game adjuster and better game planner. And Bill Belichick, doesn't matter who they play, I do believe they're going to be 4-0, especially since this game's at home. I think Garoppolo's actually going to play, which is an advantage for New England. And Tom Brady comes back, and Cleveland is his first start, and they will be 5-0 after that one.
Jared Goff, the first pick in the draft, hasn't seen the field yet. No idea when he will. Are the Rams being too cautious with him, judging by the success of all these other young signal callers this season?
I believe so. Now Case Keenum's a serviceable starter and a pretty solid backup and carved a niche in the league, but they've got a really good defense. And at some point, this just tells you how far behind the Wentzes and Dak Prescott's that Goff is coming from his system. It just does. So, and Jeff Fisher is always leery. He's done it with players before about putting young guys in, but as long as they keep winning, he's going to be able to buy time without from the fans without having to start Jared Goff. But it just shows you terminology and how difficult it is to come from that system, an air raid system, and apply it to NFL, the mechanics of getting under center. So they're going to stick with this as long as they possibly can, unless they lose three or four in a row. But I didn't think Goff should have been the first pick of the draft. I think he'll be fine. But I liked Wentz. I actually like Prescott even better as well, and Paxton Lynch. So we'll see in the long run. But this is probably the best thing, because he came out of camp not ready to play, and Case Keenum's getting him by.
Over in Green Bay, Eddie Lacy notched his first ever 100-yard outing in September, as hard as that is to believe. Notoriously slow starter, but we talked about the weight loss. Is this the year that he finally blossoms into one of the league's great running backs?
He's going to have to, and I think as long as he stays focused on making sure his body's right and can stay healthy, yeah. And it is hard to fathom that guy's first September 100-yard rushing game this early in the season. It is hard to believe, but as long as Rodgers stays upright and they stay in rhythm, they're a difficult team to beat in the NFC. And I'm going to tell you the key for them, not only is protecting Rodgers, but it'll make it even easier on Aaron Rodgers and everybody else if Eddie Lacy stays healthy and can average a 22 to 30 carries or touches a game. So, yeah, I think this is a monster step for him. And in a league that we're kind of deficient of top flight first, upper echelon, Todd Gurley, Le'Veon Bell type backs, I think Eddie Lacy can be one of them, as long as the commitment to watching out for his body and taking care of it's there, because he'll get his touches, especially as the season rolls on in a cold weather Green Bay.
Sean, after the Saints' blowout loss on Monday night, Drew Brees talked about that game and said he thinks things will turn around for the Saints. How do they turn around when they're giving up 30-something points a game, and is it too late already?
Yeah, they're not. It's not turning around. That's because Superman, meaning Drew Brees, is so optimistic and has had to carry a franchise. Can you imagine how bad they'd be without him? I mean, good gracious. He has to hang 35 or 40 a week to keep them in a game. They're the notoriously bad defense, and maybe that has something to do with the fact that their offense, you know, scores a lot of points and plays fast and throws the football. But that's in it, you know, a lot of teams do that. So that's a bad excuse. They've got a lot of injuries on defense, but they haven't drafted well either. They're underachievers. It's a bad defense. Sometimes you just got to recognize that your personnel is not as good as the other guys, and it's impossible to ask a quarterback to throw 35 and 40 points a game on you and to throw for 5,000 yards a season and 45 touchdowns. Brees is phenomenal. He is the franchise, but it's not going to change. That team is going to battle for, you know, they'll be lucky to win 6 or 7 games, and if they do, it'll be because of him. It's not changing, though. The culture of that team is offense, bad defensive personnel, and it doesn't matter who the coordinator is, Rob Ryan, Dennis Allen, they're just not, whether they're not committed to it or whether they don't understand how to play it. Bottom line is the New Orleans Saints will always, well, at least for now, until the defense gets better, doesn't matter how good the offense is, they'll always be chasing people.
Now for the final question of our six-pack, we go to the Pacific Northwest. Russell Wilson is battling injuries to both his legs. Now, obviously, you want your line to protect you better, but at this point, is Russell Wilson now responsible for finding a way to better protect himself?
Yeah, he is. But he's really, you know, when he is taking some hits and that offensive line is not good, and he had to overcome that last year and really took another step in his game. But they've got to make a commitment to that position. That's number one. But now we know from the ankle to now the knee, where is he going to be? But, you know, and after this, they have the bye week, so getting ready to play the Jets. Do you rest him and say with Arizona's 1-2 starts, St. Louis, I mean, or the Los Angeles Rams don't have a great offense, should we rest him? I think if he's 85% or more, you play him. But he is really good at finding pockets to slide in. So I give him a lot of credit. The problem is, taking hits in the pocket, you can't defend, and if you can't get out of bounds and it's 3rd and 3 and you got to dive for a first down, you're going to put yourself in a bind. But he is a great player, a great playmaker, but also one of the smartest running / passing quarterbacks we have in this league. But they have to keep him healthy, because we saw them finally break out offensively without Russell Wilson. That team becomes, that team will have to do what Denver's doing for the most part and win on offense. But Russell Wilson, if he's close to being healthy, they'll play him.
That is Sean Salisbury spitting the truth over at SB Nation Radio, and especially on his Twitter feed. Make sure you're following that at Sean Unfiltered. Thanks so much for your time today, Sean. Really appreciate it.
Honored to be on. I really appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Thank you. Well, that's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted over at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files and check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at sdrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R, and I will catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.